Despite the best efforts of navies from around the world, pirates continue to flourish off the coast of Somalia. They capture all kinds of ships, hold their vessels and their crews hostage, and collect multi-million dollar ransoms. In the latest issue of Vanity Fair, William Longavisha tells a story rich in irony about Le Ponant, a French cruise ship captured by Somali pirates last April, and how, in a strange way, both the perpetrators and their victims operate outside the structure of nation states and international law. William Longavisha is an international correspondent for Vanity Fair. He joins us now from the studios of Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, California. Nice to have you back on the program.
Well, thank you.
And we know how the pirates operate outside the structures of international law and nation states, the ships.
Well, one of the ironies of this whole piracy story and the media attention that it has received over the past 6 months or a year is that no one is saying that the people who are complaining, the people who are being attacked, so to speak, at least the ship owners, are the very people who have led the charge in freeing themselves over the last 50 years from the constraints of the nation state. I mean, these are the revolutionaries, and I mean ship owners, the shipping industry in general. And more power to them, nothing wrong with it. But now to find them sort of wrapping themselves in the flag and demanding naval protection is ironic.
Well, that vessel did fly the French flag.
Well, that's a particular case. It's not a typical ship, but that French flag was not even a genuine French flag, but was a construct of the French state, its own flag of convenience, so to speak, which was designed to allow ship owners to avoid French law, labor unions, and so forth. So it was not even, in this case, an authentic French flag, though it was a French flag.
And again, talking about the ironies in this story, it is a the chances of getting taken, any ship getting taken, the traffic through there is pretty substantial. The chances of any one ship getting taken are very small, even today.
Relatively small, right? This is one of the most busy waterways of the world. You have to go through the Gulf of Aden if you want to go to the Suez Canal or leave the Suez Canal and get to India. So between the Indian Ocean and the Mediterranean, just about everybody has to go through there. If you don't want to do that, you have to go around South Africa, and that's a long way to go.
And this ship, it's a cruise ship, a sailing ship with a motor, obviously, but normally has passengers aboard, but in this case, just the crew of about 30 people, and were taken by pirates as they came up north into the Gulf of Aden.
They were leaving the Seychelles and were heading north to the Mediterranean for the season. There were no passengers aboard. Usually there were American passengers aboard. That it was a very luxurious 60-passenger, 300-foot sailing cruise ship, modern. But with these mostly French, mostly young crew members aboard, they were sailing empty and basically ferrying the boat to the next position. And they went through the danger zone in that condition, and they were taken in that condition.
And it sounds, well, obviously being taken is terrifying whenever it happens. Nevertheless, the pirates, in the end, weren't all that threatening.
Well, I mean, they were threatening, but they weren't violent. I mean, they threatened violence, but didn't actually sort of proceed with it. And this has been the pattern with Somali pirates. There have been very, very few deaths. I mean, these are not violent acts, although violence is the backbone. They are holding weapons and pointing weapons. So it's a mix. But no, they were not violent, and really no one expects them to be violent. This is one of the problems that navies face. I mean, if you're dealing with an opponent who, first of all, does not recognize your superior strength because you have a naval ship, and second, is not actually executing hostages the way, for instance, a terrorist might, you have a very hard time intervening. These people are operating in a different dimension from the naval forces to a large degree. So this presents problems. Obviously, they're not very violent.
And you tell the story of the French president, Nicolas Sarkozy, then the new French president, and his frustration at being utterly helpless.
Of course, it's outrageous to the national leaders of all countries that this would go on. I mean, this goes against the grain very much of the kind of people who become national leaders who are totally invested in the idea of government and nation state and naval forces and so forth. You have people who are basically sticking their fingers in their eyes, and this does not go down well, especially with a man like Sarkozy, who's something of a hardliner, at least in French terms. and brooks no nonsense. Well, he had to brook nonsense. He had no power to stop the nonsense. And this is what the story is about.
And indeed, the ship's owners, for whom the eventual ransom, they negotiated down to, I think, what, $2.15 million, something like that. Nevertheless, they were playing with somebody else's money. This was insurance money.
USAIG, to speak of the news.
So they had absolutely every incentive, despite the French president calling on the other line saying, don't pay the ransom. They had every incentive to go ahead and pay it.
Absolutely. They had that incentive. And in fact, I think that you would find if you could enter the souls of the ship owners there, that in this particular case, you would find that even if they had not been insured, they would have wanted to pay the ransom. From financial calculation alone, it's just very expensive to have your crew members killed by naval forces. And beyond that, I'm sure there were other sort of more ethical and human aspects of not wanting these people to be hurt.
And so, in a sense, you also at the end of the piece do a calculation on the amount that cargo charges to ship cargo through that part of the world has gone up, and effectively that everybody here is making money.
Another funny aspect of the story, but if you look at it, sure, there's a surcharge on many shipping lines for cargo going through the Gulf of Aden. And that surcharge, as you know, I mean, is calculated in such a way that there are margins on it so that, yes, it is a response to increased insurance costs and so forth. But what you find is that everybody involved, the insurance companies and the shipping companies, are actually profiting from the piracy at the same time calling for naval protection.
And at the same time, you don't do the calculation, but it's pretty easy to run through in your head. The French Navy responded with any number of vessels to this ship being captured. It trailed it for a number of days. There was, in fact, a military operation at the end of it when some of the money had been transferred back onto shore and some helicopters went and intervened. Nevertheless, they certainly spent more than $2.15 million.
Hugely expensive operation, sure. It involved the Canadians as well. I mean, we have these joint task forces now steaming around, various ones in that area, on anti-piracy patrols. Now, you could say, look, navies need to have something to do, and you know, they would be spending the money anyway. They probably would. We don't see much of an inclination by militaries worldwide to stand down from expenses. So I assume that, you know, the incremental increase in cost is probably relatively small, but it does help to sort of provide some perspective to keep in mind that this huge operation is mounted and it amounts to nothing. I mean, basically, they were unable to do anything, and for good reason.
And at the end of the day,
and the pirates knew it.
The pirates knew it. They were sitting there laughing at this.
More or less, that's right. They knew that they were pretty much invulnerable. I think they also probably had a different view of death than we do, or probably a little bit less afraid of it and less inclined to worship safety than we are. So there are some cultural aspects, philosophical aspects that were different. But pretty much they knew they were safe. And as long as they had those hostages and didn't start killing them, by the way, as long as they had them and they held them in a safe and happy condition, they were going to get their money, and they were going to leave with that money, and this is exactly what they did, and not just in this case. This is the routine pattern in Somalia.
And we just have a minute with you left, but you suggest, again, at the end of the piece, we all might be better off if the Navy's just withdrew and allowed the shippers and the pirates to work out an accommodation.
And they would certainly work it out. I mean, if there's one thing the shipping industry has proved over the last 50 years is that it knows very well how to live in a world beyond a nation state.
A world beyond the nation state, yet that rankles so much against so many people's instincts.
It doesn't rankle against mine, I'll tell you that.
William Longavisha, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
William Longavisha is an international correspondent for Vanity Fair magazine. His article, The Pirate Latitudes, appears in this issue of the magazine. He joined us today from the studios of Capital Public Radio in Sacramento. And tomorrow, much of the... That's not tomorrow yet. It's not time to talk about tomorrow yet. We're time to tell you that you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.